Hey, what's going on, everyone? This is your host, Matthew Kirby, and welcome to a new season of the Young Black HR Podcast, brought to you and sponsored by Honest Human Resources Consulting. Our mission is to have meaningful conversations by amplifying voices and perspectives we need to hear in today's times. The Young Black HR Podcast challenges how we define a human resource through discussion of our talents, abilities, and backgrounds that we bring to the table. Now I have one question for you. How are you a human resource? Enjoy today's episode. This one's on me. Hey, what's up? What's going on? Welcome back to another episode of the Young Black HR Podcast with your host. Y'all know how I do it by now. It's me, Matthew Kirby, and I'm so excited to not only be here doing this episode, having this conversation, because look, y'all, sometimes when we think about DE&I, we got to take a step back and really make sure that we are all on one accord, on the same page. But look, before we get into the meat and potatoes of things, let's not waste any more time and get right into it with today's guest. So today's guest is Leslie Short, the owner of the Kavu Group and a diversity, equity, and inclusion strategist. She has an accomplished background that includes running marketing and PR for FUBU, serving as corporate operating strategist for Blueprint Plus Co., and starting several successful international businesses. Leslie has been developing multicultural / mosaic marketing and programming as far back as 1998. And in her book, Expand Beyond Your Current Culture, she offers tips on how to think differently about diversity and inclusion to achieve a sustainable, diverse, and inclusive workplace. Hey, Leslie, what's up? What's going on? Welcome to the show. How you doing?
I am wonderful today, Matthew. Great to be here. Looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, and you know what? Just thinking about this topic, look, I know by now, especially the last year, two or three at this point, everybody's been talking about everything DE&I related in so many aspects, so many important conversations that we are not only hearing in our workplaces, our workspaces, but look, for those of you that have been listening to Young Black HR, we've been having multiple conversations as well. So there is just so much to get into it. But look, Leslie, I want to not treat you any different. So I got to ask you this. How are you a human resource?
You know, I think what happens is the fact that I lived out of this country for 13 and a half years as a woman, as a Black woman, as a Black woman with a mouth, as a classical ballet dancer, as so many different things, a choreographer, director, producer, I am a resource that is, I hate to use that word unicorn, but I have a unique perspective when something goes right and when something goes wrong. And I have no problem sharing that. So I think that's, you know, if you come to me, you know, there's no banana up the tailpipe. I'm going to give it to you straight. We're going to talk about it. I'm going to give you some options. And then it's all up to you.
Absolutely. And look, that's all you can do is take it in, do what you will, because it sounds like y'all, look, we ain't even got into it yet, that Leslie is going to give it to you real, and you take and do whatever you want with that. But no, I appreciate it. And even just thinking about, you know, some of the conversations that I've had over the course of, you know, these past few months, these COVID and pandemic times, you know, DE&I has been, you know, not only a hot topic, a hot space, right? You see everybody and their mama talking about it. Everybody and their mama is a DE&I consultant in that sense. I'd be like, where were you, you know, couple of years ago? But right. needless to say, you know, I wanted to, you know, take a step back when we talk about DE&I, and we'll talk about some great aspects in this as well. But I always like to think about when we hear in our daily lives on LinkedIn, wherever, when we hear DE&I professionals talk about the work, yes. Right? We always hear this reference to the work. Right. We haven't seen as much, at least I haven't seen as much, when we think about, okay, yes, DE&I folks do the work, but what does the work look like? What is kind of like that day in the life? right? We understand that it's exhausting and all this good stuff, but really to put this in perspective, for folks who are definitely not in HR, but even if you are in HR, for folks who aren't in DE&I on a day-to-day basis, grinding it out, dealing with a whole bunch of things, you know, what does that look like for you? What is the work as it relates to your experiences?
So that's two different questions, believe it or not. Because when we as DEI professionals say, you need to do the work, we're not speaking about ourselves. We're speaking about the clients, the people, and the work that they need to do. So let's go back and say, what is the work that I do on a daily basis? Like today was client day. So if I'm working with a committee, it's really, I'm saying to them, where are we from where we left off? What has been accomplished from the last time we saw each other? Has the board gotten the recap? What are their input? And it's a constant building. Has the staff been notified? When is your next full staff meeting? Are you updating them on the assessment part too? And is that constant, like reminders almost sometimes, where are we with the mental health workshop? I'm not only doing the work of saying this is what we need, but I expect the people I'm working with to actually have to use their resources, to have to think about who they are and the added value for which they're bringing to this conversation is part of the work. And then talking about it, sorry, you have to execute.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And even just thinking about it from that perspective, one of the things that I try to get people to understand, and I'm sure you've done this, your spaces as well with clients, stakeholders, cross-functional partners, right? The list goes on, is really answering or really begin to have those conversations with the average person, right? Whether you're in HR or not, but really getting folks to realize that, hey, you know what? DE&I isn't just, you know, this initiative from some sort of top-down structure. DE&I is also bottom-up. How do you get folks, you know, even just thinking about best practices to really understand that, hey, you know what? You know, DE&I isn't just some exclusive club and people get in and, you know, get a little, you know, participation trophy and everything for some great programs. But what do we think people really need to understand and get a sense of, hey, you know what? DE&I is me. DE&I is you. What can I do if I'm the maintenance man, if I'm on the plant front line? How do you get the messaging of DE&I to transcend all employees, various levels, things of that nature?
All right. Well, let's remember when it started years ago, it was top down because it was checking that box, you know? And then in the last 18 months, it came bottom up. And all of a sudden, top had to recognize it. It is from the mail room to the boardroom, is what I have to say. It is not an add-on to a company. It has to be built into the foundation. And in order for it to be built into a foundation, the DEI committee, head of, whatever you want to call these positions, they're not the event team. So stop looking for them for every holiday that will launch you do some type of event. This is about equity. So that means the buy-in has to be from the top. How are you getting promotions? Do you know the process on how to get a promotion or how to get paid or how your health benefits are? Like those are the basic lines that don't tell me in HR. I have this conversation with all the time because I work with them a lot. Like, yes, it's in the handbook. I'm aware you did your job, but let's be honest. Someone got hired. They signed off on that handbook. They got their check. Nobody opened it again. So then how do we make those things that's in the handbook livable? Is it part of a code of conduct? Are we doing updates? Are we making sure the process and procedure is not only for those at a certain level, but for everyone throughout the company? So you have to make it alive and part of the foundation of conversation and not add on like you're doing someone a favor. You're not doing anybody a favor.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree with you anymore. I mean, I think just, you know, when I think about various aspects of this, look, folks was checking boxes, you know, folks was just like, all right, we got diversity, we good, right? But then I'd be like, well, what about equity and inclusion? And I would arguably say out of the acronym, we don't talk about belonging enough, right? Ooh, sometimes you can have DEI, some sort of combination, but folks still feel some type of way about their job, right? So belonging you know, belonging is definitely, and I tell people this all the time, it's that acronym that really hangs around out there that people really don't get into. And I think there are a number of different ways we can look at that. Mm-hmm. There are a number of blocks that we can think about. There are a number of hurdles. So when we think about just some of these greater cultural blocks, these hurdles, you know, how are, and from what you've seen, how are businesses, how are organizations beginning to think about building those cultures and their foundations within their organization? Look, and for y'all that are listening, this is before we talk about talent. This is before we talking about all the other things. What is the foundation building like?
It's company culture, number one. And it's not belonging. I have this thing, so I'm biased. I'll be the first to say it. I don't believe in belonging. I, as a human being, decide where I belong. A job doesn't tell me I belong. A job, a career, an office, their job is to build an inclusive culture for where I can see myself growing. But they can't make me feel like I belong there. So I think number one, shifting that mindset on that a company culture is for everyone that walks through that door. Can they see themselves in a way of advancing a movement? And if they can't, then we need to look at what the company culture is. And then let's take another step back. Before we do all of this, if you're going to yell diversity, equity, and inclusion, right? What's your definition of diversity? See, we need to break that down. And then what is the equity that you can give to someone? And then how do you make that inclusive? How do you make sure that people understand what you're offering to them? And until we have those conversations and break it down, like we're in elementary school and hit it with the ABC, now let's go over to D, sing the next letter and let's move on, then we are stuck in ABC checking boxes again.
It's so funny that, you know, you kind of mentioned really those ABCs and how fundamental they are. I feel like, and for those of you that are listening, I enjoy picking on myself from time to time. You know, I sometimes when I be going through the alphabet in my head, Leslie, I still be singing the song. And then I'd be like, you know what? What if there is some sort of diversity alphabet or, you know, diversity song that people can really get, you know, just to really keep it simple. I think when we think about D&I and the number of complexities that surround it, every little bit and piece and ingredient is so subjective, right? I can literally, whether they're DEI professionals or not, or regular people, I can literally ask the person the same question and I might get five different answers. So it's always interesting thinking about people's perspective, right? What are those biases that they bring to their not only, you know, perceptions and understanding, but to the table, right? Is your experience as a woman of color, because I know we like buzzwords and whatnot, different than mine as a as a quote unquote, you know, person of color or a man of color? You know, I feel like, Leslie, I go on a little bit of a tangent. You know, sometimes during these past 2 years, I feel like people be coming up with new vocabulary every day. And I'd be like, where did this come from? I am so behind. Maybe I didn't hit refresh enough. But even just thinking about that, it's interesting when we look at this and how important it is to take a step back, how important it is to have those operational definitions from a culture standpoint. So as we think about these times that we've been in, and I'll just pick on last 2 years, right? It's never been a dull day for this period of COVID and everything. But, you know, how have you seen either resistance, right, or acceptance? I'll throw it at you both ways, from those who are in positions of leadership to be like, hey, you know what? I want to go a little bit further than just doing some lip service, maybe throw out a policy or a memo or a statement, and actually be like, hey, I know we as an organization aren't perfect. What does that humility look like, and how has that manifested from those that you work with?
So number one, I won't work with anyone that throws out the statement, the commitment, sign the commitment, we're going to start with a committee, and not be what? Committed to actually doing the work. That means reviewing policy, counting how many folks you have in your organization? What is the leadership looking like? What is the pathway? Like, if you can't tear all of that down for us to have a real conversation, then you're not a company for me to work with, because you're just out there talking about, oh, we're in, and you're not even close to the circle. You're not even in the circle. You're just trying to get around the circle with picket signs talking about, oh, I want to be part of this. So no, unacceptable. And then I always ask everyone, what's in your bag? If you ever hear me speak, you are here, I will probably die going, what's in your bag? That means, who are you? What are your biases? What is it that you're bringing to the table as a leader, as HR, as an employee? Do you understand who you are and your added value to the conversation about DEI? And if not, then I need you to just sit back and listen for a moment before we do these knee-jerk reactions on putting black boxes out and Juneteenth and picnics and all types of other things that are band-aids to appear that you understand what's happening. It is okay not to understand. On the flip side, I've had CEOs and other people that have really done the work on themselves and read the books and come back with valid questions and are, hey, this is wrong. I realize, I see it now that I haven't opened up. I thought I was inclusive, but everyone looks and sounds and walks like me. This can no longer be. How do we make sure, though, when we bring somebody in, that they do feel inclusive? So there's people that really want to do the work, and it takes time. And there's others that are like, oh yeah, we can do this, but I don't want to include this category or LGBTQ or disabilities. I'm like, then you're doing segregation within inclusion, and that's unacceptable.
See, all right, so here we go. I love it. And those of you that have been listening, you know, I say this at least once an episode. Just look, Leslie, just with some of what you said, and we ain't even in this thing all the way good yet, just with some of what you said can literally be spun off and be different conversations within themselves. When we talk about marginalization within inclusion, for example, don't even get me started. And stay tuned, y'all. There'll be more episodes on when we talk about disability, whether visible or invisible, mm-hmm. inclusion and issues around that. But even just thinking about those very things that you've even said up to this point, you know, they can be their own podcast if need be. And I think ultimately it's a situation where how we look at this, how we handle this, really resonates and comes so much from our lived experiences. And Leslie, you know what? People know this by now about me, but I like a good story time. I like to put things in perspective and, you know, give the people a chance to hear, you know, how did you come to starting the Kavu group? You know, what was like your motivations? You know, like, what was that? Damn it, I got to do something, because folks is tripping out here. How did you get into this space?
You just said it. That's exactly what happened. I was sitting in a meeting. I was like, if I hear diversity and inclusion thrown around like a buzzword one more time and I have to break it down, I'm going to lose my mind. I really am going to lose my mind. And I really sat back and said, I looked at a lot of companies and I looked at a lot of trainings and I said, I don't want to do any of it that way. I want to build this completely different. And I've been doing this work. I didn't jump in because it looked like there was a check involved in the last 18 months. You know, I was doing this work when people were like, are you sure that's what you want to do? Why are you doing that? You know, my background is, like I said, being a young Black girl at the age of 7 to be chosen to be trained as a classical ballerina, when people said there's no such thing. And Balanchine said the color of a ballet dancer should be the color of an apple core, which is white. You know, I was with the Joffrey Ballet and Pennsylvania Ballet Company, and I was blessed enough to be chosen by very prestigious companies very early on in my life. So when someone says, yeah, I'm the only one in the room, I'm like, big deal. I've been the only one in countries. Let's talk. Now what are we going to talk about?
Right. Come on now.
You know, so when we look at all of this, I kept saying, this is not magical. Why are we trying to make this so hard? Diversity, equity, and inclusion is about human beings. It is about humanity. It's about understanding and communicating with another human being. That is not magical. What do you want when you get up in the morning? You want a roof over your head. You want to eat. You hope your family's good, whether you like them or not that day. You want something cute to put on, or you just want something to put on. You just want to get from point A to point B and be healthy and be good and do what you do. So does everyone else. So why are we putting roadblocks for the fact of a color of someone's skin, or the fact that they are in a chair or not in a chair, or have a disability that you can't see, or the fact of their gender or who they love that may not look like someone that you love? Why are we pinning that on someone's talent or ability? Because that is what we're doing sometimes when we look at DEI. And we're tagging people and we're filling a hole. Well, no one's looking to have the hole filled. People are looking to climb the mountain and build it with you. Look, I'm gonna stop right there, but there's a lot.
You know what? It's so important. I think, you know, I try to tell people, you know, ultimately, you know, we all want to be exist. And sometimes, probably a lot of times, maybe most of the time, we just want to be left alone. Leave me alone, right? Let me be great, whatever that looks like. Let me exist. I'm not here. I don't exist for your comfortability, right? Because we could get into right fragility and even think about how a whole bunch of things are centered around whiteness, DE&I included, right? I'm not here to make you feel so comfortable that you feel like you can go home and be like, oh yeah, I'm a good person today, right? That's not what this is all about. And even just kind of putting that into perspective, as we think about what these blocks have done, honestly, from organizations, you know, I try to tell people at this point in the game, you know, blocks cost billions, right? Think about, and for those of you that are listening, think about your, you know, a company that you admire, your favorite company, product, service, whatever the case may be. Think about, you know, let's just even throw it back a decade. I'll use that as an example. What if some of these very same companies were more inclusive, more diverse, more equitable, right? And all of that just 10 years ago. How much of an experience could that have been from an employee perspective? Mm-hmm. How much of an experience could that have been when we think about product inclusion, which is definitely an important topic to talk about? Yes. So even just thinking about, okay, wow, we've literally left money, billions in this case, on the table simply because of how we look at each other.
Yes.
Or only think that, hey, the great ideas, the innovators, the talent, which we'll get into here shortly, you know, come from a particular person or people, mm-hmm. right? Even thinking about, you know, when we think about different perspectives and things like that, why aren't more of them on the table? How much better could that have affected the bottom line and what that has looked like? So even just thinking about from those leaders, how do we best prepare them to be able to look at that and say, hey, you know what? Innovation just doesn't come from one place. But we really need to consider more of a community and a group approach to certain things.
Well, they're so busy hiring agencies, right? The agency for this, this is the urban agency, this is the Asian agency, this is the LGBT agency. There's all these different, again, segmented agencies that was coming in to work on certain projects, but yet no one was speaking to everyone. So you come in and you work with this team, but you're not speaking to the PR team, you're not speaking to the advertising team, you're not speaking to the sales team, you're not speaking to the other agencies. So everything was getting thrown out there with a monolithic viewpoint, where none of us are monolithic. And, you know, I will say, do you think all Black folks think the same? Hispanic, Latina, I can go on, Asian, like, no one is monolithic. And I go, so if we want to look at it in my head, then does that mean that all Caucasian people are all the same? I think a lot of hands are going to go up and be like, whoa, 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 whoa. I'm different than Jim over there. Don't put me over there. Same thing. So yeah. When we're looking at this, we need to take that out and not just say, I'm going to hire agencies. Who is in my company that I believe has a valid voice, right? That can be at the table with a valid voice and not just invited in when, hey, look at this. Okay, we're good. Great sneaker. Okay, that's great. We'll all jump real high. No, to say, here's some functionality. This is how things are used, to really be part of creating product, which in return will create a consumer accountability and authenticity to the message. See, there has to be a commitment, accountability, right? Authenticity, and then release. And once it's released, you still have to do all those same things. Rinse and repeat. Commitment. And folks have not done that.
Yeah. And I think, and, you know, just kind of curious, even just to hear your take on this, you know, I feel like especially, you know, when I tell people all the time, when DE and I became cool again, there was always that what I look at and consider in some part, in some aspect, a bit of a bystander effect. And my comparison with this is, you know, for those of you, I'm sure most of us, you know, at some point with the elementary, middle, high school, all that. And y'all remember if at your school, if this applies to you, you know, there would be, you know, like dances or like celebrations or whatnot. And then, you know, if you're one of those people that either got there on time, or even if you came more fashionably late, there was always that point in time at a dance or a social or some sort of gathering where somebody had to go first, right? Or somebody had to get out on the floor, you know, do they thing, they in their zone, and then everybody else, you know, started coming in, and we have this great event, have this good time together. What have been some of the hesitations or things that you've seen that oftentimes plagues either leaders or organizations from being the one or those ones to go first? Why can't we see more people jump out on the dance floor and get this party started?
Because, okay, I won't say the words I was going to say. They're looking at their colleagues. So when people jumped in these 18 months, we're signing. Some people literally told me, well, I called you because my colleagues called. I said, but that's not how it works for me. You know, your colleagues prepared to do the work and dig deep. So are you prepared to do that? Are you just following the herd? See, we had a lot of following the herd. People signed all those commitments. I don't know if you heard about a month and a half ago. A lot of them was like, ooh, not going to be able to do that. No, can't do that anymore. And so you have the group that wanted to follow, jump in, sign, don't want to do anything. And then you had some people that was just like, this is the right thing to do. End of conversation. I have some clients was just like, end of conversation. This is what we're going to do. We're going to start, you know, with I don't like to call them training sessions. We're going to invite certain other colleagues outside of their company even. We're going to look inside of our company. We're going to keep building this, and we're going to lead the way because it's the right thing to do and it's past due. Some of them said, that takes a lot of work. I literally had someone tell me, wow, that's a lot of work, Leslie. And I'm like, yes. And it's consistent. It's like showing, you got to show up every day. And you have to be aware of who you are every day.
No, I think those are good points. And even just thinking about this, you know, number one, understanding who you are, to your point. I mean, that is so true. I think there's, you know, different perspectives when we think about, okay, how to go about bringing your authentic self to work, right? What does that look like? How much is too much, right? If there's such thing, when you think about it. And it's always, I think a lot of the environment in which one works in really plays a part. I mean, hell, we can even broaden this up to say in life, right? It kind of goes back to knowing your audience. So if we're giving the leaders out there of the world just a little break for right now, I'm gonna shift to everybody else. Mm-hmm. If we're talking about everybody else, and we're thinking about, okay, knowing who you are, knowing what you bring to the table, dare I say, even managing the imposter effect and all that, which is a whole nother conversation.
Yes.
What is, you know, what does really bringing that authentic self look like? Is it a personality? Is it really being like, look, here go my whole demeanor. You know, I'm going to take this mask off. You know, I normally used to put on at work, but y'all going to get chill, Matt, or chill you, or chill Leslie. How should folks begin to navigate, like, okay, bringing my authentic self to work, you know, how much should I bring? How much is too much? Leslie, help us out, because so many people are struggling with that.
Well, I tell companies, number one, stop saying that, because you're lying. You don't want everybody's authentic self. You want their authentic work self. Because number one, your work doesn't deserve all of you like that. And that may not be the audience to talk about what you do on the weekend or how you do things or what your family is. So you have to understand how you want to be perceived. If you want to be the jack of all trades and you this, that, and the other, don't be mad when they ask you to do 15 other things, because you already said you jack of all trades, right? Then now you're mad. So what is it that you want people to know about you and understand about you? Say what you want, but you can't mess with my work ethic, okay? You know that I'm resourceful. You know that I'm connected. What are those things? I'm open to having conversation. I have no problem leading meetings, but I also know when I need to say no. I will stand up and speak for myself and for others when I see something that's not right. That is all of my authentic self, but not one person in this world may deserve all of me. And not 6 days or 5 days or 7 days a week, however many doggone days a week we work now.
Ooh, that is so true. And I tell people it's always simplistically looking at this. You know, you got to know your audience, right? And with that being said, I think even with how just in general, we've gone more digital, right? People working at home, you know, even as we think about these conversations of, oh, when organizations are going to do the quote unquote return to work, which is really bad marketing, if you ask me. But with that being said, you know, just thinking about, you know, hey, we've been at this thing, or a lot of us, I won't say most of us, in terms of work from home for so long, right? Over a year and change for a lot of people. And even just thinking about the stresses and the anxiety when you think about coming back to the office, and hell, even more practically when we think about traffic again, bus fare, right? And metros and all of that good stuff, just to get to an office where it's like, all right, here we go again, the chat by the water cooler, and you know, just really doing a lot of the things. So as leaders begin to wrestle, and of course this is ongoing, you know, how should leaders begin to get more into a mindset of staying ready so they don't have to get ready? What are some of those proactive approaches that you've seen and have really helped, you know, your clients, organizations, people really be able to get that and really manifest it?
Well, you know, I had a company that went back last week, but I worked with the CEOs, I worked with HR, I worked with the chief of staff. And I really said, number one, no one's coming back to work. We're coming back into the office. Nobody stopped working. So let's make sure our terminology is correct. You're going to have the anxiety, the folks that like don't even want to be bothered with people. And you're going to have the other side of people so excited to come back. And so I broke that down for the CEOs. And I said, this is where that dimension of there's going to be so much. This one wants to hug. This one doesn't want to be touched. I worked with them for the first week on making sure that it was a week of reconnecting. So get your work done, but go have lunch, go do this. Because if you honestly think anyone's going to show up in the office, flip that switch, throw the dead plan away and get down and get to work, you're setting yourself up for failure in the next 2 weeks. And I'm going to get the call. They're not agreeing. What happened? All the work we did all summer. Da, 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 da. And I was like, and I'm not going backwards. So they actually took my advice. In that first week, it was about reconnecting. The teams went to lunch together, had drinks, like talked about how they were going to move forward as a team, how they were going to work, even how the days they work at home, what that was going to look like. In individual conversations, not only just the team conversations, because everyone home is still different. And when I checked in with them, they were like, wow, we're actually really surprised because we haven't had any issues because we let people come back in. And then what's happening next, the CEO is like, okay, let's see what's next. Next, I'm showing up in the office so that they know that the work I did with the team and the work that I'm doing with them just didn't finish in the box. and we open the lines of communication of who on the staff are people that they can go to when things aren't right. And so we built that system so it would be there when everyone returned back into the office. You have to think about what's happening in the future and not just what you need, but who have you hired to do what you need to get done and what kind of mindset they are in.
I think you bring up a great point, and I don't know if you are reading my mind, stealing my thoughts and ideas. No, y'all, I'm just kidding. Leslie ain't stealing nothing. We just two peas in the pot at the moment. So just even thinking about, and you start to get us in this direction, but even when we think about, you know, talent, right? And everybody wants diverse candidates and things like that. What are some ways that as we think about coupling that even with returning to office, or for those who are, you know, starting remotely, right? Mm-hmm. For those of you that may or may not know, I was one of those employees that just started remotely, right? I'll tell you this, Leslie, within, I'd say about the last year, I may have physically put foot in an office probably about one or two times. Right? You know, new job, you want to at least check it out, see that you've been there. And in my case, you know, for those that know what I do and everything like that, my office is in the LA area, right? So for me, there's even more about, all right, let me hop on a plane, go visit, right? You know, get some good snacks. Shout out the snacks. I'll tell you what, Leslie, I'd be missing some of these snacks and whatnot that being workplace offices. I'd be like, man, maybe I should move a little closer so I can just run and get something. But that's just me being hungry. Even when we think about that, you know, from this idea of diverse talent and thinking about going back to what we were saying earlier, the cultures that need to be built, how do we begin to think about going further? And I'm going to broaden this up because I know some of y'all listening, you'd be like, man, Matt, you've been picking on leaders all day. All right, cool. I'm going to broaden this up. How can we as employees collectively begin, especially as we get into the space, quote unquote, post-COVID and all that, but how can we all do our parts to build inclusive cultures? And what does that look like as we begin to reconnect and kind of get back into the swing of things and all that good stuff?
We have to continue to speak up. See, what happens as Black and brown folks, especially, we go, I'm sick of telling somebody what I want. I'm tired. They should know by now. Well, clearly they don't know by now. And do you want them to know for the way your colleague told them? Or do you want them to know for the way for which you, what works for you? And so it's okay to be able to have that conversation that, hey, this is what I'm looking for. This is what I'm thinking about. And that's the gig over there that I want. How do I make that happen? Who do I continue to connect with? See, we're so busy waiting for it to all fall into place. It has to work on both sides. You have to have an invested interest in your own interests for inclusion and to hold the company accountable for everything and all these commitments and all these workshops you've done these last 18 months. Now that you're back in, hold people accountable and say, hey, I thought we were doing this, or I thought we were going to do that. What does that look like now? Ask the question.
I think that's so interesting that you bring it up because it puts me in a mindset that, you know, hey, we and I'm being hypothetical in this sense that we, let's just say those of you that are listening that aren't people leaders or leaders, managers, supervisors, et cetera, you know, getting at that idea of, you know what, we need to manage up. But Leslie, look, managing up can be scary as hell sometimes. You know, you can't be, you know, sometimes you can't always roll in there and tell your boss what needs to be done, like you the boss and whatnot. Okay. You know, so how do we begin to help people, I guess, start to get over those hurdles? I think one of the things that you mentioned is really getting at, in my mind, closed mouths don't get fed.
Right.
So speaking up is one, right? But how do we get people past just speaking up, and really how does accountability manifest for folks who may not be in those decision making or those leadership positions?
So when is that time for that team meeting and someone says, are there any other questions or are there any other additions to this? Or did we miss anything? sometimes it's okay to say, hey, I was thinking about it this way. What do you think? You're not pushing somebody, but you're letting somebody know that you're thinking about something, you know? And then you have to also kind of pay attention to, maybe it's not always your boss. There may be someone else that you get to build a relationship with. We get stuck in this is what I do, but how about what's happening? I remember when I was in, when I first started at FUBU, and I didn't know how clothing was made. I had no, I owned a lot of them, but I remember sitting in the corner one night, it was 10:30 at night, listening to the designers discuss stitching and buttons and all kind of other stuff that had nothing to do with my job as head of PR and advertising marketing, but yet it had everything to do with my job. Why? Because now I could have a different conversation with the press people that other PR people were not having. Oh, it's a double stitch and it's this and it came from India. And I sound like I was over there in the factory making stuff. And so people will call me and be like, yo, Leslie, give you the best quotes. Like she's going to nail it for you. Why? Because I took the time to learn something new. So sometimes you may not be able to say something at that moment, but you can ask, hey, can I take that course? Educate your, it's not only about learning up, but you know, or pushing up, but learn up is what I like to say. Learn up, keep learning something new and making sure that other people know that you just took a new skill, or would they invest in you to take a course or a class? Or again, you have to ask, you have to be proactive, even if it's not always in the job.
And that's, you know, I was literally, that's so crazy that you say that. I was literally talking to someone, you know, about, you know, hey, we as employees, right, all of us, mm-hmm. you know, we have to be careful sometimes about working in silos, right? Yes. We have to do a little bit more in terms of getting outside of, yes, you do your day-to-day things, right? Whatever that looks like. But you also want to think about, hey, how can I prepare myself for the next role? How can I prepare myself for the me of tomorrow? And even now, I was also, and I got to pick on this. I think I'm going to do a whole nother episode on this. But even in the context, y'all are folks who got multiple jobs. Good Lord. But I'm going to say some thoughts on that. But even just thinking about, no matter what job or jobs that you have, you know, what business or businesses that you have, for those of you that are listening, how are you thinking about being the you of tomorrow, mm-hmm. the you of next year, of next week? Look, y'all, and I'm sure a lot of us know this by now, but you know, it's a candidates market out here. Folks just bouncing around and they just doing their thing. They feeling empowered. And I've read a few articles that even kind of referred it as the great resignation, right? Folks is just leaving, they just mm-hmm. getting out. And I compliment and always shout out for people for doing those things. Wow. But really, as we think about, you know, this greater conversation of DE&I, right? The work, right? That not only looks different for everyone, obviously those who are in the space and the place that are fighting the front lines of DE&I, that's going to be a unique perspective. But even as you think about, hey, you know what? I'm just some software engineer. I'm just some product manager, some project manager, whatever the case may be. Look, I'm just some HR admin, something like that. Whatever the role that you're playing, that's not the end. That's not it. It's not a silo. Begin to think about, you know what? I get some sort of idea. Hopefully this applies to most organizations, but I get some sort of idea that at least my organization doing a little something. It's not the way that I would want it or it's perfect. You know, at least they're not throwing fried chicken and watermelon at us and talk about, you know, Juneteenth when it's, you know, October or December or something like that. You know, at least they understand a little bit. But even with that being said, being your own advocate is sometimes mm-hmm. the best advocate you can be, saying, hey, you know what? There are some things that, you know, while yes, I get that, you know, you all are working on as a leadership team and probably got a couple of outside consultants and everything that, you know, you all are using as resources. Hey, here are a few things that I want to begin to think about transforming my role, transforming my position. I want to begin to think about and frame it like this. I want to begin to make what I do on a day-to-day basis less transactional, right? That's when people get bored in their jobs and mm-hmm. just, you know, and you're just on autopilot. But also when I think about, hey, I don't want to stay in this damn job forever. What can I do to think about making this role more inclusive in the sense of, hey, let me broaden outside of my scope. Let me think about, hey, you know what? If there aren't ERGs, and I wish we had more time, because we definitely go down that route as well. Woo! But, you know, I wish we, you know, we had groups and ERGs, and how you go about starting one. And I'm only at this small company, and, you know, how do I make sure the powers that be don't confuse ERGs for uprising as if we were Nat Turner in them or something like that, you know? But how do we make sure that ERGs hold their weight and go for those organizations that, you know, may not have them or are in the process of getting them? So it's just a few of these thoughts why I tell people, and I know folks are laughing at me right now. Matt, you always say this could be another episode. Well, it could be. It's so much that we got to put in. But look, before we get out of here, Leslie, you know, just thinking about some of your thoughts on that, but also thinking about, hey, what can we all do to really get that understanding of what's life like as a DE&I professional and what is the work?
The work changes daily. Depends on what client I'm working with. So I am actually doing placements for some companies that are looking for diverse candidates. But I'm not only looking for diverse candidates, I'm actually dealing with the CEOs and preparing the company to accept and understand what inclusion is, while I'm trying to prepare the diverse candidates on how they need to continue, whether they're executives, how they present, because that's something that I don't think we've been taught, right? So we have that. So that's part of my work, making sure that the diverse candidates are prepared for what they're walking in with and who they're going to be dealing with. What is the work the companies need to be doing is realizing they don't know everything, to ask questions. The whole thing of nothing about us without us really means do not make policy procedures and processes without the people you're making them for at the table. Doesn't mean they're the final decision, but there must be buy-in and understanding from your employees. And if you are making procedures and processes that affect Black and Brown employees and those with disabilities sight seen unseen and never spoke to anyone that has a disability, barely speak to those that are Black people of color, then they need right. to be brought at the table to have those conversations. All those policies and procedures need to be done with agencies, again, that have valid voices within this community. So doing DEI is a consistent, there is not one thing that I don't touch, whether it's a handbook, a policy, a procedure, or a person, to break it down to make sure that there is a route for advancement, growth, payment, and being inclusive in the outlook and the outreach for which your company's foundation is supposed to be built upon. Don't ooh, make me sorry.
Ooh, well said. Y'all, for those of you that are watching, you know, we over here looking at Leslie doing her thing over here, dropping mics and everything. But look, that's a great way to leave it off. There is so much more that we could easily get into. We will be talking about this for days, if not years. But look, Leslie, you know, we want to know, you know, what's going on with the Kavu Group? What's next? What can we expect?
I have my book out right now, Expand Beyond Your Current Culture. So for HR leadership, everyone that's like, wait, I need more. It's all in there. I wrote it very simple. There's that. Opening up a new office in another state right now. So it's going to be New York, Philadelphia, and Miami. We're definitely, okay. You know, we're expanding in not only the work that we do of the sessions and working with CEOs and building company culture, but now we also have the other leg of doing placements, executive placements. So it's there's a lot going on.
Okay. Love to hear it. Love to see it. Y'all got to let me know when y'all come out west. For those of you that are listening, you know, I've been holding it down out west for a number of years. I'm in Seattle now, but was in California before. So I definitely, we want to keep rooting for you, you know, get you some West Coast offices. We need it, right?
Yes.
All over the place. Right. and it's great to hear about that expansion. Look, Leslie, before we get out of here, how can people follow you? How can people continue to engage with you? And more importantly, how can people continue the conversation?
All right. So you can always follow me on LinkedIn at Leslie Short. That one's the easy one. And then all social media is The Cavo Group. And make sure you put The Cavo Group. Otherwise, you're going to get a construction company called Cavo Group. You know?
Fair enough.
And how you keep doing, you have to keep speaking. You have to be open enough to listen and to have a conversation.
Well said. I mean, that's a hard act to follow. So the only thing that I can say for y'all, those of you that are listening for the first time, the 10th time, the 100th time, I don't care what time, please continue to support the campaign, support the podcast. Please follow us, engage with us at, you guessed it, Young Black HR. That's Facebook, that's Twitter, that's Instagram. And for those of you that are in GroupMe, keep up the conversation. We love to hear it. We love to see it. This platform is for you. It's we, not me. And thank you all. Y'all know how I do it by now. This has been a great, very engaging and entertaining conversation for this week. So tune in to next episode. And this has been another episode of the Young Black HR Podcast. Make sure you connect with today's guests on social media accounts. And if you haven't already, bookmark and check out our website at honesthumanresources.com for your career-related needs. Also connect with Young Black HR on your favorite platform at, you guessed it, Young Black HR. You can locate us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Again, I am your host, Matthew Kirby, and I hope you enjoyed today's conversation. Tune in to next week's episode.